Hare Krishna. So, I'm grateful to be here amongst all of you today. And I'll speak today and tomorrow on the topic of training ourselves to interrupt the train of our thoughts. Training ourselves to interrupt the train of our thoughts. Now, what do I mean by this topic? First of all, our thoughts go from one to another, to another, to another, and as they keep going, they also keep growing. So, often, say one incident happens. Say, I remember in my childhood, I was the organizer of one competition in school. And at that time, so we had organized the competition. It was like an essay writing competition. And I was known as one of the good writers in our school. So I had organized that. And then this competition went off very successfully and many students participated. And then the prizes were to be distributed. So I was sitting and the students were going and I was also of course a student, but I was one of the organizers. And then the various students were going and winning the prizes and the teachers and the principal was distributing the prizes. And at that time, suddenly as I was watching this, the whole event was reasonably successful, but suddenly the thought came in my mind, you know, oh, nobody appreciates me. I worked so hard to organize this program, but all these students are being appreciated and they are winning the prizes. Nobody appreciates me. And then at this, that thought, oh, you know, okay, this time nobody appreciated, that time nobody appreciated, that time nobody appreciated. And it was just 5 minutes before, I was very happy thinking that, oh, we have organized this whole competition and it's been so wonderful. And just the next 5 minutes later, I was so agitated. And then suddenly, you know, one of the students who had won, he came to me. He was very happy he had won the first prize. And he came to me. I was in 9th, 10th standard and he was in the 5th, 6th standard. So he just came along and he was just trying to speak to me and I was about to snap at him because I was so angry. And it struck me, what am I doing? At one moment I was so happy, I was quite happy, and suddenly after a few moments I was just so agitated. One of my hobbies in childhood was that I like to look at the universe through a telescope. So one of my favorite pastimes at that time. It was a time pass in a sense. but it was that I would go to our terrace and look at the telescope. Look through the telescope at the sky. And we were waiting for some lunar eclipse to occur. And then suddenly, I just zoned off. I was looking at it, and suddenly I got lost in my thoughts. And then it struck me at that time, I'm so interested in what happens out there in the skies. But what happens in here can sometimes be so, you can call it interesting or distracting. Either way, that it can just consume my attention. So what actually goes on inside? So I had prepared, anticipating that night when we would see the eclipse. We've been looking out for it for a lot, many days, but when that moment came, I suddenly zoned off. So that was supposed to be very interesting for me, but somehow the thoughts captivated me. So from that time I was thinking, actually, what exactly happens in our inner world? And we all can see that our thoughts just flow from one to second to third, and our moods can rapidly change because of this flow of thoughts. So Krishna talks about this train of thoughts in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. In verses 62 and 63, he talks about dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodho bijayate krodhat bhavati sammoha sammohat smuti vibhrama smuti brahmashat buddhinasho buddhinashat pranashyati. So Krishna is telling here from the journey from contemplation to self-destruction. Dhyayato is contemplation, pranashyati is destruction, self-destruction. Now this specifically is with respect to sense objects. Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha. When we contemplate our sense objects. But this can apply to anything. It can apply to the temptations for pleasure. It can also apply to negative emotions. So I may go to office and I see a strange look in my boss's eyes. And immediately my mind starts imagining. Is my boss going to fire me? Oh, if my boss fires me, what will happen to me? You know, I will have no job. If I have no job, how will I earn money? If I can't earn money, how will I pay the mortgage for my house? If I can't pay the mortgage for my house, then I'll be evicted from my house. If I'm evicted from my house, nowadays houses are too difficult to get. If I'm on the streets, and it'll be so cold. And right now, I'm trembling because of the AC, but in my mind, I'm trembling because of the cold outside. So the mind's train of thoughts, it can start from one stimulus and it can take us to any extreme. So, now how does, so this train of thoughts can sometimes take us to a good destination also. Thoughts are not our enemies. Thoughts are simply, we could say, pattern of ideas in our head. I'll come to a little later when I'll talk elaborately about what exactly thoughts are. But thoughts are not the problem. It is our readiness to uncritically believe our thoughts. That is the problem. So when the thought comes in, oh, what if this happens? What if you lose your job? Then that one thought can just grow. And we keep believing it. That is where it becomes a problem. So how do thoughts overwhelm us like this? So sometimes we get lost in thought. Now this can be bad when we get absent-minded, but it can also be good if we want to ponder deeply about a subject and understand the issue. Then thoughts themselves are, you could say, neutral. They can be good, they can be bad. Whether they will lead to something good or something bad, it is for us to evaluate and it is for us to respond properly. Now the word thought itself can have two different meanings. Before we move forward to understand what are thoughts, the words themselves have multiple meanings. One time, I was traveling from one place to another, and just before I went from the house out, I picked my suitcase, the devotee picked my suitcase and the handle just came off. So then the handle came off, then at that time, I was checking whether we could fix it, so the devotee told me in America, buying new things is easier than fixing anything. It's very complicated. So they just gave me a new suitcase. And because they just took the suitcase and the wheelchair assistant took the suitcase to the check-in point. So then by the time the flight, I landed and I came to the carousel, you know, I had forgotten what the suitcase looks like. So because it was a brand new suitcase. So then, and somehow the luggage tag that was there, that was left with the devotee at the other place. So then as I just remembered that it has a red handle. So then all the suitcases with the red handles we are picking up and looking. So we are looking at all the suitcases. So now, why am I giving this example? That the terms are like the handles and the concepts are like the suitcase. So the term is like a handle. So we all have certain thoughts, certain ideas in our mind, but words or terms specifically, they are the tools which we use to communicate with the ideas. So the terms themselves, just like the same colored handle can be, there are many suitcases. So similarly, the same word can have many different meanings. So the word thought is like one handle, but what suitcase it is attached to, it can vary. So there's two simple meanings which are relevant for our context here. I got a thought and I have given this a lot of thought. Can see the difference over here? I got a thought. That means it's just an event which occurred in our inner world. Just it's been some idea just came in. You know, many times in cartoons or comics you show somebody's lights in their brain, you know. So that's like you got an idea. So I got a thought means that something got stimulated in our inner world. And the second is, I have given it a lot of thought. That means, here the so first thought means just the initial triggering event in our world. The second thought means systematic contemplation or analysis. So thought can have both these meanings. And when the thought occurs first, if we identify with it, if we get carried away with it, then it acquires momentum. And the stronger the momentum, the more difficult it is to stop it. It's like, say, if somebody is, say, a car is moving along the road, and the car starts going off track, then if you press a brake, it'll stop gradually. But depending on how fast it is moving, that much time it will require to stop, because it has got more and more momentum. Similarly, when Krishna talks about the sequence from dhyayato vishayan pumsaha, from contemplation to self-destruction, what he's talking about is that initially, dhyayato, this thought has come in, we are giving it some attention now. At that time, it's like the car has just started. But by the time it moves forwards more and more, there is contemplation, then there is infatuation, then there is irritation. We'll talk about these stages later. But as it moves forward, the momentum becomes stronger and stronger. And then to stop it becomes more and more difficult. So thought refers initially to an event that occurs in our inner world. So we could, for simple purposes, we could say thoughts are simply words in our head. It's not exactly true. I'll analyze the difference. But words inside our head, if we consider that, say there is a screen inside us. So, say we decide to do something important. Say a student appears for exam, or we decide to give some competitive exam, or we decide to do something challenging. And somehow it doesn't work out. And then the thought occurs in our mind. You are a failure. You are a failure. You are good for nothing. Now, when this thought has come in, it is like there's an inner screen, and on inner screen, these letters have appeared. You are good for nothing. Now, as we keep looking at it, it's like we keep looking at it, it keeps growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, you are good for nothing. And as we keep hearing it, our consciousness starts getting invested in it, and in other incidents, you know, see, that time also it didn't work out. That time also you made a foolish mistake. Here also you made a mistake. Here also, therefore, you're good for nothing. So the mind, when thoughts come in our head, as a train of thought starts moving, basically, they give us one perspective and one narrative. Perspective means how we look at things. Narrative means how things flow. So one perspective, okay, you are good for nothing. So well, that's one perspective. But one narrative means this is how things are going to turn out. And things for us, yes, we all are human. And the only way that we will never commit any mistakes is if we will never do anything. To err is human. So we all commit mistakes. But at that time, at one perspective, say, yes, see, you committed a mistake. And then the narrative goes forward that you always made mess of things. And then as that, from that perspective, that narrative starts moving forwards, we start feeling more and more miserable. We start getting distressed. We start getting completely agonized. So basically, a thought, initially when it comes, it is like a word appearing on our inner screen. It's not working. But not as well as you would like. It's okay.
No, like when you're not talking into the mic, when you're like looking from side to side, the volume goes down.
But isn't it omnidirectional? It is. Hare. Okay, I'll move it up. Okay, sure. Hare Krishna. Is it better now?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So, when the train of thought starts off. It starts off like a train is stationary. It starts off when the engine starts moving. So like that first, the thought occurs in our mind. That's a pattern, we could say that's a words in our inner screen. Sometimes there can be thoughts which are words in our inner screen. Sometimes the starting may also be an image. Something appears. Oh, that happened at that time. Say, something happens now. The mind is to think that some small things can trigger big reactions in us. Why? Because that small thing is not seen in isolation. The mind connects it with something. Say, I lose something. And if I, now we always sometimes lose some things. But, you always keep losing things. You are always irresponsible. You're always foolish. You're good for nothing. You lost that, you lost that, you lost that, you lost that. So, that's how the thoughts start moving forwards. In this way, when the thoughts start moving, they start off with one image. Oh, I lost this. It can be a thought in the sense of words, or it can be an image. That image also stimulates our thinking. And then, as we start moving forwards, we start getting more and more carried away by it. So when the thought occurs, at that time, if we could evaluate it, it's just like if a train is starting to move, at that time only the driver checks, hey, is the train moving in the right direction or the wrong direction? So then we can check it. Oh, it shouldn't move in this direction. Now, all of us have certain attachments. Or we could say we all have certain mental tendencies. Mental tendencies means that our thoughts tend to go in particular directions. So for some of us, the thoughts may go in the direction of, say, like earlier I said, self-pity. Always things keep going wrong with me. Sometimes the thoughts may go in terms of some attachment. It may be, say, for somebody is alcoholic. Then, as soon as they want pleasure, immediately their thoughts will go to alcohol. As soon as they want some relief, immediately their thoughts will go to alcohol. So, when we have certain tendencies, that means, if you consider this train, if the train is on a ground that is inclined, then even a little push will cause the train to start moving. Just like I think a couple of days ago, there was some news in India that a train moved several kilometers without any engine. Yes. How? Yeah. Because the engine had been removed, but the train got its own momentum. The driver was not there, the train kept moving. So now the train is not meant to move without an engine. But if there's an inclination, then the train will just move on like that. So similarly, for us, we all have certain thought patterns which we have become habituated to. And going along that thought pattern becomes natural. It does not require effort to go along that thought pattern. Rather, it requires effort to not go along that thought pattern. Just like if a floor is inclined, if I have some toy and the toy is kept on the floor, normally it will be stationary. But if that floor is inclined, then the toy will automatically start moving in that direction. So, the way we have thought, the way we have acted in the past, it all creates impressions within us. And those impressions, especially when they become very strong, they create inclinations within our consciousness. Inclination means that's how our consciousness will move. So if I am habituated to negative thinking, always, it is said that for every problem there is a solution. That is how optimists think. And with every solution there is a problem. That's how pessimists think. Now it's true that every problem, we can find a solution to it. And whatever solution we find in this world, there will be problems with that also. That's just the way the world is. It's always dualities are there. But what we focus on? Now, you tell somebody that, why do you think so negative? Yeah, I'll think positive. I'll think positive. And then, I'm going to think positive. And as they're thinking, I'm going to think positive. But one day I'll think positive, but tomorrow again I'll start thinking negative. Now when they're thinking like that, it is not that tomorrow they will think negative, today only they started thinking negative. So what has happened, that where we are inclined in a particular way, our thoughts will naturally go in that direction. And when the thoughts start going in a particular direction, it requires effort to stop them. So now the Bhagavad Gita talks about a very interesting concept in the second chapter. The same 62-63 is this chain from contemplation to self-destruction. Now, the opposite of it, Krishna talks about it little later. In 2.70, he uses a metaphor to talk about how this can be avoided. Apuryamanam achala pratishtham samudramapah pravishanti yadvad tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashanti mapnoti na kama kami. So he says that just as rivers flow into an ocean, but the ocean doesn't get disrupted by it. Similarly, he says, many inputs will flow into our consciousness. Desires will flow into our consciousness. But they don't have to agitate us. Krishna is a very interesting compound word over here. Na kama kami. So, kama is desire. Kami is desirer. So, Krishna says, who can be satisfied? Sashanti mapnoti. Who will have peace? One who is not the desirer of desire. So what does desirer of desire mean? That means that by certain past impressions, some desires will pop up within us. So if somebody is, say, habituated to drinking alcohol, then the desire for alcohol will naturally pop up within them. And then when the desire pops up, oh, what do I do with it? Do I start contemplating it? Do I start craving for it? If I do that, then I get carried away by it. But if I don't do that, if I don't, okay, this is popped up over here, let it be there for some time, I will not pay attention to it. So to understand how we can do this, to understand basically how the mind works, let's do a simple thought experiment. So wherever you're sitting, you can sit comfortably and can close your eyes. Don't go to sleep. Just close your eyes. And along with me, you can take 3 deep breaths. 1. Let all the air go out. 2. 3. 3. Now, with your eyes closed, look at what you see in front of you. Because your eyes are closed, you will not see physically whatever is in front. But there is something like an inner screen inside you where you may see various things. You may see some image of this room. You may see your own house. You may see your family members. You may see your home. You may see your car, or you might just see some colorless, dull kind of pattern. And the images on this inner screen may also keep changing. Now, as you are observing this inner screen, try to take a step back and look at who is observing this inner screen. Take a step back and try to see who is observing the inner screen. Try once again. You are seeing the inner screen, but move back. Try to see who is looking at that inner screen. No matter how many steps you take back, the inner seer takes steps back with you. What you are looking for is what you are looking with. So that inner seer is the soul, and the inner screen is the mind. The inner seer is the soul, the inner screen is the mind. Now you can take one deep breath and then you can open your eyes. Thank you. Yeah, you can open your eyes. So this kind of contemplation can help us understand that we are different from our mind. There's an inner screen on which many things appear, and usually we just get so caught by whatever appears on the inner screen that we identify with it and start acting accordingly. But if we can distance ourselves, yeah, I am not that inner screen. I am the inner seer. Just as, say, in your house, there might be a cartoon show going on, and say, the children are just watching that cartoon show, completely glued to it. Now, you are also in that same house. The TV is also there for you to see. But you can look at the TV screen and you can look at the person who is looking at the TV screen. They're so caught over there. They're so excited. Sometimes they're excited, sometimes they're agitated, sometimes they go through different emotions. But when you get caught in watching the TV, then what happens? Our consciousness gets invested there and that's what we experience. So for us as souls, the mind is where the outer world appears. And not just perception from the outer world appear, also recollections from the inner world also appear. Whatever we have thought in the past, that also appears on the inner world. And if we get caught in watching the TV, if you consider the mind to be like a TV screen, then we get caught in watching the TV, then our emotions start getting shaped by whatever we are seeing on the TV. But if we don't focus on watching the TV, you can be in the same room where somebody is watching a TV and they are excited by it. You know, sometimes if you go to a movie theater, there are these ticket checkers in the movie theater. I don't know if they are there now. Probably I had not gone to a theater for 25, 30 years now. So I don't know. Oh, but there's ticket checkers. Now they have seen the movie so many times. So people who are watching the movie get excited. I mean, now what will happen? Now what will happen? Now what will happen? But they are looking at the movie theater, they are looking at all the spectators. Because for them it's an old story. They don't get excited by that. So similarly for us, either we can be the spectator who watches the movie, or we can be the observer who watches the spectacle. The spectacle is that this person is sitting safely. If it's a horror movie going on, the people may be sitting comfortably on their seats in an AC theater, but they're sweating, they're trembling. Some of them may be screaming. What is happening? That's because the consciousness is invested over there. So similarly, for us, when our consciousness gets invested, then our emotions get shaped accordingly. But if we can take a step back, this image is going on over here. This image has popped up on my inner screen. Do I need to focus on it? Say somebody is watching a TV, and say the kids are watching the TV, and if you stop the TV, they are going to protest. They want to watch it right now. Now, we may not be able to stop the TV, but we can choose whether we want to focus on the TV screen. We can focus elsewhere, and our emotions won't get invested there. So similarly for us, we frequently, what appears on our inner screen is not in our control. Sometimes people act in unreasonable ways. Sometimes life just gives us a raw deal. So what happens, some bad things happen in the outer world and they get reflected on our inner screen. Or sometimes just some bad images come from the past and they get reflected on the inner screen. They get depicted on the inner screen. Now, as I said, we can't always control what appears on the inner screen. But we can control whether we get carried away by it or not. Whether we focus on it or not. So how do we do this? For this, we need to, first of all, philosophically understand that I'm different from my mind. At the mind, thoughts are coming within it, but that is just a screen on which thoughts are coming. The Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, Krishna talks about how the mind works. And there he says, actually, 15.7, he says how the soul is suffering in the material world. Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. Manah shasthani indriyani prakriti sthani karishati. He says the soul is a part of Krishna. Krishna is right next to the soul. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto. But It's like the child is sitting next to the mother, but the child is watching the horror movie and child is trembling, scared. So like that, the soul is a part of Krishna, the soul is next to Krishna, but the soul is caught in whatever is being depicted by the mind and the senses. And manah shashthani indriyani, because of this what happens? Prakriti sthani, in the material world, karshati, one is agitated, very agitated. In the 13th chapter, two chapters earlier, Krishna talks about how this world is like the kshetra. And the soul is the kshetrajna. Kshetra is the field and kshetrajna is the knower of the field. And when he's talking about the kshetrajna, there he says that
Mahabhutanyahankaro buddhir avyaktameva cha indriyani dashaikam cha panchachendriya gocharaha icchadvesha sukham dukham sanghatashchetanadhritihi etad kshetram samasena savikaram udharatam.
So it's 13.6 and 7 in the Gita. There he's saying that he describes the material world is made up of 24 elements. There are the 11 senses, there are the 10 senses, knowledge acquiring and action senses, working senses. Like that he gives a list of 24 elements. But a significant thing, I won't go into that technical list. But for us, this important thing is Krishna says, Ichha, Dvesha, Sukham, Dukham, Sanghatashchetanadhriti. So he says, our attachment and our aversions, our happiness and our distress, our convictions and even our consciousness itself, all these are Kshetravikar. Kshetravikar means they are transformations of material nature. Now in the first chapter, Krishna has already said that consciousness comes from the soul. Consciousness does not come from matter. And yet here in the 13th chapter, Krishna is saying, consciousness is a transformation of material nature. Kshetra vikar. What does it mean? Actually, consciousness comes from the soul. But right now, for all practical purposes, the soul's consciousness is invested in the body, in the physical structure of the body and the mind. And the soul at present cannot experience consciousness separate from the body and the mind. It's like a person, that's like when we go to watch it, now we can watch movies at our home and we can watch movies in a theater. And the same movie may be available at home also, still people go to theater and pay a lot of money. Why? Because they can immerse themselves in that experience. They can avoid all distraction. They can experience the reality. So when a movie starts, what happens? Two things happen. First is, one light goes off. All the lights around go off. And then one light goes on. That is the light on the monitor. And that way, we don't see anything else. We just get riveted to what is happening on the screen. Similarly, when the soul comes to the material world, or the soul is in the material world, at that time, there are two energies. There is the Avaranatmika Shakti and there is the Prakshepatmika Shakti. The Avaranatmika Shakti is like the lights go off. The soul forgets, soul becomes blinded to everything at the spiritual level. Although we are like the spectator, so the soul is here and the body-mind machine is here. The soul is the spectator in the theater. And the theater's monitor, theater screen is like the mind. But presently, because of the Avaranatmika Shakti, the soul can't perceive anything else. Just like if it's pitch dark in a theater, then you can't see anything. You can only see what is ahead. So similarly for us, by the Avaranatmika Shakti, at present, we can't perceive consciousness. We can't use our consciousness to perceive anything apart from the body mind. The consciousness, we could say, locked to the body and mind. And this Avaranatmika Shakti is what causes darkness of spiritual reality. And the Prakshepatmika Shakti, it is a throwing potency. Avaranatmika is covering. So all spiritual reality gets covered. And Prakshepatmika is the pushing or throwing energy. What it does is, it pushes our consciousness towards material nature, towards the screen of the mind. And thus we get glued to it. We get fixated with it. And then when this happens, So 15 points says, Karshati. Krishna says the soul suffers in material existence. How does the soul suffer? He says in the next verse, Shariram yadavapnoti yachapyutkramatishvarah gruhitvaitani sanyati vayurgandhani vashayat. He says the soul acquires one body, gives up one body and goes to another body. This, the prakshipatmiksha, the throwing energy is so great that the mind and senses pull the soul from one sense object to another, one image to another, one pleasure to another, lifetime after lifetime. Now when the soul comes to a new body, there the soul gets a new apparatus. It's like we watch one horror movie in one movie, in one movie theater. And as soon as the show gets over, it's like we are picked up and thrown into another theater where another horror movie starts. And there we get glued to it. Now, even horror movies, it's not constantly horror. There's some horror, there's some action, there's some hope, again there is horror. There's some hope, again there is horror. So, like that, we just get caught and thrown from one horror movie to another horror movie. And in the when we get a new body, what happens? Shrotram chakshus parshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva cha adhishthayam anashayam vishayan upasevate. That the soul gets these five knowledge acquiring senses. Shrotra is the ears, yeah. Chakshuhu, eye. Shrotra, shrotram chakshu. Sparshanam cha. Sparshanam is?
Touch.
Rasanam? Taste. Tongue. Granam? Smell. Yeah. Thank you. So these five senses are there. Adhishtaya manashchayam. All these are centered around the mind. And then through these, Vishayan upasevate. The soul tries to enjoy the sense objects. So basically, if you want to understand this mechanism, I give the example of a screen on which a person is observing. So the mind is like that inner screen. But let's make this picture a little more. Let's develop this metaphor a little bit more now. If we consider that instead of just a movie theater, there's a monitor over there, but let's shift, consider another monitor of another kind. If there is a monitor which is in a security room in a very high security building. So it's a big monitor and there are say 5 doors in that building. And at each door there is a CCTV camera. And the inputs from that CCTV camera are brought to this monitor. And there's a security in charge who's sitting over there. And whatever is happening in all the doors, he can see. And then if any suspicious looking character seems to be coming from any door, immediately press. And that window zooms out. Mm-hmm. That window zooms out and they can see what is going on over here. So, similarly, for all of us, we could say our mind is like a monitor, but it's not just one image over there. So right now, say you are hearing what I'm speaking, but at the same time, you know, you are also sensing, okay, you're sitting on a floor or a sofa. Is it soft? Is it comfortable? Is it not comfortable? So there are many sensations that are coming in. So say right now when you're sitting and you're hearing the class, so ideally speaking, it is out of the 5 windows that are there, the eyes window and the sound window, they are prominent. Mm-hmm. And suppose as you are hearing this, suddenly there is a delicious fragrance of a halwa that comes over. Then as soon as the fragrance of halwa comes in, then what happens? Immediately the nose window zooms out. And our consciousness, hey, okay, halwa, when will I get it? Will there be enough for second helpings? So our consciousness gets carried away. So this window zooming up and zooming down, it is constantly happening within us. And when I talk about this window, which some window zooms up, some window zooms down, this most of the time happens so fast that we don't even notice it. Now, if you are driving a car, at that time, say we are focusing on the driving. At the same time, if the person sitting next to us is talking with us, and then we are also hearing what they're saying. So we hear it, we give it some due attention, we may talk also, but we also have a part of our awareness which is focused on the car. And if suddenly something unexpected happens, or the traffic is becoming a little crowded, or we're not sure, oh, which is the road I'm to take, then what we will do? At that time, we will just minimize the sound window. We'll talk later. Or if they're talking, we'll not hear. We'll focus on the eye window. And this way, we are able to process how to do things in the world. What is happening and how to respond, we process. So the mind is the inner screen that is the integrator and the presenter of inputs coming from the outer world. So from the five senses, the inputs come in. They are integrated on the screen of the mind and they are presented for the soul to respond to. Of course, the picture is even more complicated. There are not just five windows over there. You could say each window can have multiple sub-windows also. So for example, right now, you are hearing what I am speaking. But say if there are some children who are gossiping behind, who are chit-chatting. No problem, you can continue. If you are chit-chatting over there, then you may want to, then we may be thinking, if we find something that they chit-chatting interesting, then what happens? Instead of this sound window, that sound window zooms out. And then we start hearing that, oh, what is going on over here? So each of these windows can have multiple sub-windows. And beyond that, apart from these five sensory windows, there is also one, you could say, window which can have infinite windows, and that is the recollection window.
Browsing history,
yeah. I'll come to browsing history a little later, good point. So, what happens with this recollection window? At any time, any thought can pop up in the mind. Sometimes I may just be sitting and chanting nicely, and some other devotee comes in. He says, you know, 6 years ago, I had given this devotee $1. But that devotee didn't pay me back. Now, where did that thought come from? It just comes up. Suddenly, it just pops up. So, sometimes, the recollection happens. Recollection is stimulated by some observation from outside. We see someone and something thought comes up. And sometimes, the recollection may come without any apparent external stimulus also. Prabhupada gives the example that if there is there's a still lake, sometimes the ripples in that lake may form because somebody throws a stone from outside. Or sometimes there may be fermentation from inside, because of which the ripples may also come. So this recollection window is, it's a window, we could say it's like an ocean of windows over there. So now, in all this, we all perceive certain things at certain times, and usually when we function normally, then we focus on that window which requires attention. But sometimes the wrong window zooms out. Say if I'm driving, and while driving, suddenly the person sitting next to me speaks something shocking. So, when they speak something shocking, at that time, we may get so shocked that the sound window just zooms out. And then, we may just get so shocked that we don't notice where we're going. And we just go and almost nearly hit the next car. And then, bang, we press the brake. So, sometimes the wrong window may zoom out in there. Now, to further complicate this example, you know, on each of these windows, it's not just an image that comes. It's a movie that comes over there. And that movie may not be based on what is actually happening out there. One event happens out there, but that triggers a movie. So that brings to browsing history. So what happens for us is that the mind basically is a device which acts based on its past impressions. So, suppose, say somebody has visited some website. Say they have visited some website called, say, Bollywood.com. So, they visited again and again. And now, they just came to a spiritual program, they heard about the Bhagavad Gita, now they want to Google Bhagavad Gita. They type B. And what happens? Immediately Bollywood pops up. So, why does that happen? Because that has what been selected in the past, again and again. So, what we have selected in the past will pop up again and again and again. So, in the, and I said there is a recollection window, there is a perception window. Now, these windows, for analysis sake, I said they are separated. But actually, a perception window trigger, when something appears on the one window, that triggers some recollection. And what will be triggered will be based on what we have thought earlier. So, if I think that some person is, you know, very arrogant, then as soon as I see that person, they may be walking normally, but just see how proudly he's walking. Now, somebody else may also walk that way. He's a nice person. Usually, the stimulus may be the same, but how we interpret the stimulus, that is determined by what kind of impressions are stored in the past. And this is how the train of thoughts starts off. So there is something which comes up in the perception, and then there is a recollection. And this perception, recollection, they merge together, and some movie is formed. And that movie starts playing. And the more that movie starts playing, the more we get caught in it. The more we get caught in that movie. And it just goes on and on and on. So here, when we understand that if there is this monitor on which a particular window has zoomed up. Now the security in charge has to be very careful to recognize where I should focus on. So okay, if this window has zoomed out, but okay, what is happening over here is not that important. Sometimes when some thieves want to come in, they may use decoys. They may just create a disruption at one door and all the security goes to that door and then they sneak in from the other door. So, now the security in charge has to be vigilant. Okay, we have to pay attention there, but we have to also keep an eye on the other things. So, when things pop out and they zoom out on our inner screen, if we can, we don't just identify it, but we evaluate it. Okay, this is zoom out. Do I need to pay attention to this? And do I need to pay attention to this right now? That, if we learn to evaluate, then we will be able to keep ourselves, we'll be able to break the train of the thoughts of the mind when it is necessary. So when Krishna says, na kama kami, do not be a desirer of desire. What he means by that is, that first desire is like a image or some words that pop up on our inner screen. When they pop up over there, we can't stop that. That's like river coming into an ocean. But we don't become the desirer of desire. That means when it pops up, we don't get glued to it. Rather, we evaluate it. We don't desire it. Okay, let it come. Let it stay there. So that window has zoomed out. But then, sometimes say we are working on our computer and suddenly some notice comes. No, a new software update is available. Do you want to update? Now I may decide, okay, I can update this later. So I say later. Remind me later. Remind me after a day. Or remind me after an hour. So we can't stop that notification from coming on the screen. But we can choose whether to act on it or not. So similarly, on our inner screen, we can't always control what appears. But we can control whether we pay attention to it and what kind of attention we pay to it, how we respond to it. And this capacity as we develop, then we will be able to focus on the thoughts which work for our good and avoid the thoughts that work against us. So some train of thoughts take us to a good destination, some train of thoughts take us to a bad destination. By learning to become observant of our inner world, we can train ourselves to distance to evaluate the thoughts and interrupt the train when it is necessary. So how to interrupt this, I'll talk in tomorrow's class. I'll talk tomorrow about the Bhagavad Gita 14th chapter, which talks about two broad attitudes. One is Sakshi Bhav and the other is Seva Bhav. Become an observer and become a servitor. So related with that, different strategies of how to interrupt the train of thoughts, we'll discuss in tomorrow's session. I'll summarize what I spoke today. I spoke today on the topic of training ourselves to interrupt the mind's train of thoughts. And in that, I talked about, I started by how we, I had my own experience, I talked about how I organized a program, but I organized a essay writing competition. But instead of being happy at the end, I started feeling sorry for myself. While watching an eclipse, instead of observing the telescope, I got caught by my thoughts. So what happens in the inner world is often quite consequential. Sometimes more consequential than what happens in the outer world also. So what exactly happens in the inner world? I talked about the train of thoughts which can make us miserable, which can make us angry, which can make us crave for things. That thoughts can have two meanings. It's like a suitcase has a handle. So the same handle can be there for different suitcases. So the handle is like the term and the suitcase is like the concept. So the word thought is like the term. And it can be referred to two distinct concepts. So I got a thought. That means it just refers to an initial event that occurs on our inner screen. I have given this a lot of thought. That means I have consciously evaluated, analyzed what to do. So we primarily talking about stopping the train of thoughts means we are referring to the first meaning of the word thought. So when this occurs, at that time if we don't evaluate, then from contemplation to self-destruction is where this train can take us. And the more the train travels, the more we get carried away by a train of thoughts, the more difficult it is to stop it. And to stop it, what do we need to do? We need to understand that this thought is different from me. So on our inner screen, when words appear, you are good for nothing. Thoughts are basically words appearing on our inner screen. And we could say memories or images, they are basically something, something verbal appearing is thought, something visual appearing is images. And we did the thought experiment about how we can, even with closed eyes, we can see something on an inner screen, but we can't see the seer of that inner screen. So the inner screen is the mind, the inner seer is the soul. And normally, if somebody is watching a TV and a horror movie they are watching, somebody else sees this, somebody can watch, else can also watch the movie, or they can watch the spectacle, how this person is getting carried away. So we need to shift our position. On the mind, some images will keep coming. We need to shift our position from being the spectator to the observer of the spectacle. And for this, I analyzed how do we get caught at the spectator by the avaranatmika and the prakshipatmika shakti. When we in the movie theater, first the light surrounding to us go off, and the light on the monitor goes on. So like that, the avaranatmika shakti, we are souls who are different from the body mind. But presently, the soul's capacity for spiritual awareness is deadened. So consciousness comes from the soul, but currently consciousness is locked in the body. That's why Krishna refers to Chetana as a Kshetra Vikar, as a transformation of consciousness. That is all the consciousness that we can experience presently. So because of the Avaranatmika Shakti, we get blinded to spiritual reality. And because of the Prakshipatmika Shakti, we get caught in material reality. So we can't directly pursue spiritual reality, but we can understand that I am the observer of material reality. I don't have to be caught in that material reality. And for that purpose, I developed the metaphor further. That the mind is like a screen which is the integrator and presenter of the inputs from the five senses. Like a monitor in a high security building which has inputs from five CCTV cameras coming from the five doors. And normal functioning requires that the window which requires attention is what zooms up. And also along with these five windows, there is also one window which can have unlimited window, that is a recollection window. So normally when we function, the right window does zoom up, but sometimes by our conditioning, some other window may zoom up. Just like if the floor is inclined in a particular way, thoughts will go in that direction. So similarly, for us, based on our past conditionings, past impressions, some windows tend to zoom out. Some thoughts, train of thoughts it just comes off, starts off and just goes off completely. Just like if I have selected a particular website repeatedly, then even if I want to go to some other website, that previous website is what comes up. So when we become, when all these windows are opening, even if a wrong window opens up, instead of just watching the movie, what is there, we step back and okay, this is what is going on. Do I need to pay attention to this right now? If you can observe that, then we can interrupt the train of thoughts. And thus we can ensure that our thoughts don't take us to an unwanted destination, but rather they take us towards a desirable destination. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
So you said that our past impressions,
yeah,
will reflect on our thoughts.
Yeah.
So everybody is not fortunate. So maybe some people have got deaths in their family. Some may have divorced. Some may have lost their land. Some may have been cheated. There are so many thoughts which are there in our mind 24/7 because you know there is something that has happened in their life which is very very drastic. So how does one control that and how does one combat this window which is always there in the back of our mind, in the subconscious mind also, and even though when we are driving or driving it comes up, so how do we combat that?
Yeah. You know, there are sometimes some TV serials which end with a cliffhanger where the hero has been thrown from a cliff and the hero is holding on to the cliff and then the villain is trying to stamp on that hero's hands and to be continued next week. So it comes like that. So I think the class ended like that. All the questions are going to be answered in tomorrow's class.
That's a good way of telling everyone that tomorrow will be only to come.
Okay, but I'll answer briefly. I'll give a preview of this. See, basically, we can't avoid what will come up. What will come up in our inner screen. But at that moment, we may get carried away. But later on, we can evaluate. Okay, when I was driving, this is what happened. Or when I was bathing, this is what happened. We can observe what are the times when we get carried away by unwanted thoughts. And at that time, and then when we have observed that, we can plan how to create some alternative direction for our thoughts. So if I'm going along a road and I know there's a pothole ahead, then I'll prepare. Either I'll slow down or I'll swerve and go by the other side. So like that, at the moment when the thoughts carry us away, it's very difficult. But later on, we can evaluate. And then we can plan to have something else for our mind to feed, to contemplate. So if we like to hear kirtans, have some nice kirtans going on constantly. If you like to hear some philosophy, have some philosophy going on constantly. If you like to memorize verses, then just memorize a verse and keep recollecting that. So basically, we need to consciously provide the mind, provide ourselves alternative channels for our consciousness. And initially, some pushing is required to push it along that direction. But if we don't do that, by default, those thoughts will come. But if we provide ourselves alternative channels, then it is relatively easier. It's not easy, it is relatively easier. It is going to require effort, but at least it's possible. It's like if the floor is inclined in this way, the water is going to flow in this direction. But what I try to do is that, okay, the water is going to flow in this direction, but in that I try to create a channel, let the water flow in this direction. Okay, it won't go flow here, it will flow related but somewhere else. So we try to create a wedge in the floor by which it can go in that direction. So like that, we have to find out some constructive activities which we feel attracted to and which can be done in the background as a default. So when we do that, that helps us to check the mind, from getting carried away by those thoughts. So each of us will have to do some inventory to find out what thoughts, what activities can become the constructive background activity that can be going on for us to prevent the mind's unwanted replays. Okay.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Pruvi.
I'm kind of evaluating your class. You could be giving a Bhagavad Gita class on 626.
Yeah, beautiful. Yes, correct. Yeah. So 620. This is the Bhagavad Gita class on 626. 626 yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyam yaitad atmanyayosham nayet. That wherever and whenever the mind wanders, bring it back on the self. Like yesterday I was in Baltimore. I spoke a Sunday feast on the same verse actually. Mm-hmm. So the topic there was, the mind may stray away, don't let it stay away. So yeah, so it's very good observation. Thank you, Prabhuji. Any other comments or questions? Yes.
Thank you for giving us a wonderful class, Prabhuji. Please accept from the level.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, you said that the thoughts are coming from the mind, right? All the five senses. But these senses are the body that it holds, is attached to the soul, right? And then this soul takes a lot of births after birth, right?
Yeah.
So does this thoughts which are coming out of this mind will carry to multiple lifetimes? Is it like only I want to know the extent of the thoughts is only for one past impressions, that's what you said. So is it possible that when the soul takes...
Okay. Yeah. So do the thoughts and the impressions, do they stay for one lifetime or do they carry over from one lifetime to other lifetimes?
Because again, it's feeding back.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course, it is... The impressions are stored in the mind. And when the soul goes from one body to another, it actually carries the mind with it. So the hardware, we could say that, so the body is like the hardware, it's left behind. But the mind goes with the soul to the next body. And that's why there are impressions which are, we all carry. And that's why even if say parents have two children, the two children are not similar. Even if they're twins, they may be similar in looks, but they're not similar in personality. Their upbringing may be exactly the same, because they're in the same house, same parents. But what is it that is different? That is, the impressions which they are carrying in their life, from in this life, from the previous life, they have come from there. So those impressions will create some default momentum, some default inclination in our consciousness. But they don't force us. You know, our past explains our inclinations, but it doesn't excuse our actions. That means, see, there is a distance between what thoughts come in our mind and what actions we do. At one level, this is not so difficult to understand. Now, we all have various relationships with each other, and we can't see what goes on in each other's minds. And that is a great blessing. If we all could see what was going on in each other's minds, not a single relationship would be sustained. You think like this about me? You had that thought. You had that thought. You know, it would be just impossible to sustain any relationship. But nature has given us the buffer between the mind and the body, between a thought appearing in the mind and action happening at the physical level. We all have certain level of willpower, certain level of self-restraint. Now, we may or may not exercise it. That varies. But we all have it. And we do exercise it to some extent. We don't always, even if we are angry with our boss, we will not shout at our boss. Some devotees may say, I don't have any self-control, you know. I have very weak willpower. But you know, when you are working at the job, we control our emotions. Even if I don't feel like doing my job, I do my job. Even if I feel like shouting at my boss, I'll be very polite and deferential. So what am I doing? I'm just basically using my willpower to ensure that my emotions don't come out at the physical level. So we do all have willpower, we do all have control. So here there's a good example of emotion popping up on the inner screen, but we choosing not to act on it. This is of course largely because of we feel that this is important for me and I can't afford to express the emotions over here. So the past determines, past can explain our inclinations, but it doesn't excuse our actions. So basically our actions are shaped by five different factors. First is our past, which could be, we could call it past karma, which comes as the samskaras from birth. Second is our upbringing. The way our parents helped us to grow up, what kind of thoughts, what kind of thoughts, ideas, habits they gave us. Third is our association. Somebody may have grown up in a very pious family, but if they go to college and they get exposed to a whole world of sin, they start getting, they start hanging with, say, people who, kids who drink and smoke and take drugs. Then what happens? That association spoils them. Then, so there is past life impressions, that's samskaras we could say. Then there is upbringing, there is association. Beyond that is our free will. So all these push us, but we can push back. If we don't push back, we will be pushed in that direction. But we have the capacity to counter push. That's our free will. And the fifth is Krishna's mercy. So now, Krishna's mercy can act in two ways. One is that it increases our capacity to push back. And second is that it decreases the force of all these. Sometimes some temptations come and we hear a nice class, we chanted it nicely. I'm not going to do this. We feel very strong. So that is conviction. Conviction means our own intelligence and our own determination to resist that pushing has become very strong. But sometimes if you keep practicing bhakti, after some time, there is purification. Purification means we don't feel the desire only. Some of us might have been eating meat before. If we start practicing bhakti, and then if we are traveling in a plane and say the neighbor next to us starts eating meat, we don't even feel the desire to eat meat. So although earlier we might have been attached to it also. So what has happened? The push is no longer there. So that is Krishna's mercy. So this, these four factors are always there, and Krishna's mercy is like the fifth factor. It's like the, you know, in software you have the wild card. Wild card only, that's the word you use. So it's, it can drastically change things. So it can increase our free will's potency. It can also decrease the pushing influence of the other factors. Okay? Thank you. Hare Krishna. So, yes, Mataji.
In 14th chapter, Shloka says that if all the gates are illuminated by knowledge, one is said to be in the mode of goodness. Can you explain that? What does it mean by the gates of the body?
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Good question. So in 14.11, it is said that when all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge, that is indicates the mode of goodness. Sarvadvareshu dehesmin prakasha upajayate jnanam yadatada vidyat vivruddham sattvam ityuta. So now the dwara, the doors to the body are the senses. The eyes, the ears, the nose. Now does it, there are many times when the Bhagavad Gita cannot be taken literally. If you take the Bhagavad Gita is at one level a historical record. It's based on itihas. So in that sense, it has its central narrative is literal. But within that, it's a work of poetry. And work of poetry means that there will be situations where non-literal usages are there. So like what is night for all living beings is a day for the self-realized. Now what does it mean? Is it that the sun rises differently for different people? No. So it is a non-literal meaning over there. So similarly here, the dwara prakash, illumination of the doors of the senses, it doesn't mean that when somebody comes to goodness, they open their eyes, light comes out of their eyes. Light comes out of their ears or light comes out of their nose. It's not that. Normally, illumination means, let's say if there's a door over there and the door is dark, then some thief may sneak in, we will not notice only. Or some child may slip out, we will not notice only. But if the door is lit, then we can observe who is coming in, who is going out. And we can decide whether to let that person in or to let this person out. Similarly, when the doors of the senses are illumined, that means we have the discrimination, we have the discerning capacity, we have the intelligence by which we can evaluate what to take in and what to let out. So sometimes the nature of this world is that, you know, we will see so many tempting objects in the world. So they will appear on the screen, on the door of our senses. So if I have got diabetes, and it's not that because I have got diabetes, the world will stop making sweet items, isn't it? Sweet items are still going to come, but then I can decide that okay, I'm not going to think about it. If I think about it, I'll crave for it more and more and more. So, okay, this I don't have to take it in. Let me look at some other food. Let me eat something else. So that discrimination, when it is there, we can decide what to let inside and what to not let inside. Similarly, we can decide what to let out and what to not let out. So some people speak to express their thoughts, and some people speak to discover their thoughts. They speak and they say, "Ah, I didn't mean to say that." So we all have slips of tongue. So basically, that means something slipped out of the door of the mouth without our wanting to speak that. So what comes in, what goes out, we are able to evaluate it. There is the discretion, the knowledge by which you can evaluate. So generally, we can say that three modes, if you want to understand, I'll talk about this more tomorrow, that in goodness, there is first contemplation, then action. In passion, there is first action, then contemplation. I do it and then think, hey, maybe I should not have done this. And in ignorance, there is neither contemplation nor action. There is simply delusion. This one gets caught in the lost in the mental world, not doing anything practical. So Krishna is saying that when the illumination is there, the doors of the senses are illumined, that means we can appropriately process what to let in and what to let out. Okay? Thank you. So, shall we stop here?
Yes.
So, we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki
jai.
Ita Gaur Premanande.
Hari Hari.
Before we get up, I wanted to announce one thing. Today we have two new devotees coming to the class. Let's welcome them.
Yes, yes.
So Kaliya Krishna Mataji has come all the way from Prabhupada village, Sandy Ridge. So please welcome her by saying three times Haribol.
Haribol!